Welcome to day 7 of the Lockdown Diaries, where we are scouring Switzerland and the UK for any positive news, as well as our saucepans at home out of total boredom, and to keep our spirits lifted in these straitened and bizarre times. My name is Emma Marnie.
And my name is Clarissa Vorfeld, and welcome to day 15 of lockdown, total lockdown in Switzerland, where the good Swiss people are extremely well-behaved and law-abiding, and the people actually voted for the government to be handed our mobile data, something that is now coming in very useful. When 20 mobile phones are found within an area of 100 square metres in public places, bing, 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 the authorities are notified. Needless to say, social distancing is working in Switzerland.
Wow, who cares about civil liberties? Well, over here in the UK, day 7 of lockdown, the police, with their new COVID-19 powers, have arrested enough people over the weekend for football games, fishing trips, karaoke parties, so much so that the Director General of the National Crime Agency has had to remind everyone that this is a national crisis, not a national holiday. So, Clarissa, who have you got at home right now?
So I have got, in the house with me right now, I've got my son who's off, his Rotterdam University is closed down, obviously, so he's back home and actually doing some online lectures. And we had just managed to get our daughter out of Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore, where she flew into Heathrow and then onto Switzerland, and she is now jet-lagged. But giving us reports on what life is like in the US now that their cases are starting to really soar. And obviously my husband, who is managing to battle on, despite the sort of great work depression, is managing to keep working and keep our spirits up. But what about you?
Well, I'm still in lockdown with my husband and 3 teenage and young adult kids. Although I am ashamed to say that my ADHD son did escape this Saturday by insisting on carrying out the Mercy mission to check up on a vulnerable aunt that he hadn't seen for 8 years, who was living by herself in London, and delivering her some food. He was hoping to meet a friend afterwards until we found out, but he's definitely finding lockdown very, very hard. And he said, when we told him that there was no way he could meet a friend, he said, all because some idiot ate a bat.
Oh, that's Now, today, we were due to be joined by the tallest ukulele player in the world, Peter Brook-Turner, but he is joining us tomorrow, because today we wanted to talk about real incarceration, prison, and how one charity has been working on the problem of lockdown in real life for 20 years and is now offering a fantastic answer to the boredom of misery of prison through needlepoint and embroidery. The charity Fine Cell Work helps prisoners with their mental health and they earn money. So we look forward to welcoming Katie Emk, OBE, the founding director, to tell us a little more. First, do you want to kick off with what's caught your eye over the weekend, Emma?
Well, I wanted to examine briefly the theory from Dr. Sherry Jacobson, a clinical director of Harley Therapy, who predicts that all these enforced lockdowns and self-isolating, not to mention boredom, will bring on a strong possibility of a baby boom in early 2021. I just wondered if you had any thoughts on that, Clarissa.
Well, I think that's a rather nice sort of good news story. It would be, I think I read the same piece saying the enforced intimacy, as they put it, you know, people who are normally so overworked and so tired are actually having to be together and in some cases have been laid off for the time being. And so, you know, what have they got to do? Just watch Netflix, eat curries and, well, you know what. So there is that. But I did also read that there could be the downside of that, which is a strong possibility of a sort of wave of divorces after everyone's been crammed in together.
Yes, yes. We are ashamed to say that we've had our first domestic violence death in Wales today.
Yeah, so that's terrible.
Yeah.
That is, I mean, I
That's
think if you're living in that environment, that is very, very frightening. But let me get on to something lighter, which is my favourite story in the paper over the weekend. The medical fetish company, MedFet, which is an organisation, well, a company that serves a small section of the kink community, as they put it. They do fetish clothing for people who have medical fetishes, and says it's donated its entire stock of disposable scrubs to the NHS. MedFet, as it's called, MedFet did this after being contacted by procurement representatives struggling to find the right equipment amid the pandemic. And they said, when we, a tiny company, set up to serve a very small section of the kink community, find ourselves being sought out as a last resort supplier to the NHS in a time of crisis, something is seriously wrong. In fact, it's scandalous.
Well, yes, I think that shows just quite how well organised and strategised the UK approach has been so far. Although you will be pleased to know that the Chief Medical Officer, the PM and the Health Secretary are still alive, despite all being tested positive for COVID-19. So my favourite tales were of the London Marathon runners who took to running marathons in their gardens and on their balconies. My favourite being Sam Hussle, who took 3 hours and did 5,000 lengths of his balcony in a flat in Essex, which amounted to a half marathon. And James Page in Sidcup in Kent, who did a full marathon with 873 laps of his garden, and then he ran ecstatically through the finish line of Loo Roll.
Oh, how brilliant.
Yeah. And lucky they got in there, because Michael Gove has tried to cut down the disobedient British to just 1 hour's exercising a day now.
Oh, that's tough. That's tough on everyone. I mean, I did also hear that now people are being restricted with their exercise, they might start to think of exercise as a luxury, not something they've got to do and they hate doing. They might think, God, I'm so lucky to be able to run for half an hour or walk my dog for an hour.
Well, it is a bit like that, because after only 1 week, you know, it's like going for a walk is the most exciting part of your day. Okay, talking of disobedient, aren't the Swiss setting up hazard zones in their own porches? How does that work?
Well, the hazard zone is something that I think is being shared widely on the internet for all those sort of geeks who want to get really absolutely kitted up to make quite sure that the virus will not get into their home. So there are two ways a virus gets into your home. It's on a surface of some sort. One is on things that you take out of your home and then bring back in: keys, credit cards, mobile phone, glasses, coats, gloves, that sort of thing. And the other, personal stuff, let's say, and the other is on things you buy or that are delivered to you. So you may think this is getting verging on the ridiculous, but from a scientist's point of view, these pathogens can, as we all know, can now stay alive and dangerous on things for quite a long time. So to handle this, you need to divide your home into a dedicated hazard zone where all possibly infected items are quarantined. So when you come in from outside, there is no point just taking all your shopping straight into the kitchen, because it's been touched by other people in the supermarket and you could be just bringing the virus into your home. So if you want to make sure it's not in your home, you leave it in the hazard zone for a certain limited period of time until the virus has died. This also applies to when you're taking in deliveries. I mean, a lot of people are ordering things online at the moment. So when you're taking in deliveries, the contents of the packages might have been touched less than, let's say, 72 hours ago. Someone said that's why would we ever have a reason to complain about deliveries being too fast? Well, that is the case now. You don't want them to be a few hours old. The virus is still alive. But preferably leave all your post and deliveries unopened for 72 hours. And then obviously while out, you know, try not to touch your face. Don't touch anyone else. Keep away from people, obviously. And if you use your phone or glasses, remember to give them a good clean when you come back in.
God, I do hope the UK is not going to go that way, but I'm sure it probably will. I think you're just like a kind of little idea of how it's all going to go towards that as things become more and more OCD.
Yeah.
But let's change the subject from hazard zones and talk about in a week when the rescue package for charities that are suffering because fundraising events like the London Marathon have been cancelled, as well as charity shops closed. We're really happy to invite Katie Emk in London to talk a little bit about her company, or rather her charity's experience of helping prisoners locked up in their cells combat boredom. So Katie, welcome.
Well, nice to be here.
So tell us a little bit, what does Find Cell Work do exactly?
Find Cell Work trains men and women in prison to do fine commercial embroidery, and they do it when they're locked in their cells. And it was designed specifically to help people get through long periods of boredom and confinement. And we work with people who actually will sit and sew in a tiny space for as long as 30 or 40 hours a week. And the work is absolutely beautiful. And it's been sold to museums and commissioned by famous artists and exhibited and sold in Sotheby's. And it takes absolutely ages to do. And that's actually really, really good for people in a situation where they're bored and confined, they don't have enough to do. And it takes their minds out of prison and to a sort of calmer and more peaceful place. And they feel less anxious and stir crazy. Right now at this time, this work is desperately needed, and our volunteers, all the teaching is done by volunteers who go to prison, and they can't get in anymore because prisons are on the skeleton staff, and prisoners are actually being locked up now for 24 hours a day, for just, well, 23 and a half hours a day. They have only half an hour cells. And cells in Britain measure about 12 feet by 8 feet and are shared with another person, and they have a loo in them, and they are very, very grotty. So you can only have half an hour out of your cell, and they're all education and sort of charity and rehabilitation staff and programs have just been cut, and people are being completely confined. And there's been a lot of worry in the prison service about rioting. Prisons are breeding grounds for infections, and there's stuff in the papers regularly about how an infection has happened here, and I think our first prisoners have started dying from the disease. And prisons are actually full of people who are not only mentally ill and extremely depressed, but also have very, very poor health, and prisons are dirty places which are not kept very clean. So one way or another, it's a time of tension and fear in prisons, and people desperately need something to do. And our volunteers who go in every couple of weeks to prison to teach men and women how to do embroidery, to give them feedback, to collect finished work, can't get in. So what we did a week ago was we had this incredible sort of group effort, a kit-a-thon we called it, and we made 660 needlework kits with the help of volunteers and ex-offenders we work with, and we packed them all up, and they've gone up to prisons across the country. And some of them are being taken by volunteers who are desperate. They're very strong women, our volunteers who teach embroidery, and they're not being allowed into prison anymore, and they're desperate. So they're kind of taking these huge bags of kits to the prison gates and liaising with prison staff to get them in and out, to get work, embroidery work for prisoners to do in their cells into prison, and to collect finished work to send back to us. So it's this extraordinary kind of web of collaboration. And we actually work with 400 prison stitchers at any one time. So that's a lot of people sewing, and that's a lot of needlework that we are aiming to get into prisons. But I mean, there are real challenges, and we're not sure if the kits will be distributed properly, because usually our volunteers control everything, and their bond with the prisoners is what ensures that work goes to and fro in an efficient manner, because there is mutual trust and collaboration. So anyway, it's a very, very difficult time in prisons, and we've made a huge effort to get as much work as we can into prisons to be done. And of course, the irony of it all is Clarissa, the other day on your podcast, was saying how people are no longer Instagramming, photographs of their holidays. They're Instagramming photographs of their craft work because they're stuck at home. Well, craft work is the prison thing. I mean, there's this huge tradition of craft work in prisons. And another topical thing is I once heard of a prisoner who made a beautiful kind of Venetian blind out of the cardboard centres of bog rolls, cut up and sort of varnished with shoe polish. Yeah. So prisoners are ahead of the game in terms of their ingenuity and their invention. And these are skills that we're now having to discover in ourselves because we're confined for such a long period.
Now tell me, the prisoners paid for these embroidery kits and things that they do? Not the kits so much, but their work.
Yes, they are. And that's a central kind of point of ours, is the work they do is highly commercial and is sold to interior designers and museums and paying customers. And it's valuable work, which is very, very fine. And they get a third of the proceeds of sales. And we actually have decided at this time, we're sending them all a bonus payment, simply because the charity up till now we've had a very good year. Their work has been sold in some very, very kind of smart places, including Sotheby's. And we wanted all of them to feel part of the success of this extraordinary craft work enterprise that's going on in prisons. But I think now the bonus will mean that much more to them, to feel that we're still connected to them and they're still a part of their family, because they will be feeling very, very isolated and, you know, just desperate for contact, like all of us, really.
Oh, Katie, that is the most fantastic story. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. And I hope those 600 kits get through. We'll all be praying for them. But I think that's all we've got time for today. So thank you for listening in. So that just leaves Clarissa to say our motto.
Oh, yes. Stay safe, stay home, save lives.